Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. My name is Corey. I'm one of your hosts alongside our friend, Mr. Arbor Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, it's another beautiful day. We're kind of in that in-between. Spring's not here. Winter's still kind of here. I'm sure we'll get hit with another couple storms. How are you doing? What's on your radar?
It was funny that you bring that up. I was, as you get older, you spend a lot of time going to the doctor. So I had my recent blood work done, just checking because I'm getting old. And you know what the one thing I'm deficient of?
Oh, boy.
Vitamin D. So, yes, I am excited that the sun is out. And my doctor wants me to get out there. But make sure you use your sunscreen. But, you know, I don't want to cause any. But it is a good time of the year, Corey. It's a great time. It's a great time to be in the tree care business. If you're a traditional forester, dirt forester, our special guest tonight, a municipal forester or an arborist working outside, this is a great time to be in this industry. So all is good. We always talked about things happening for a reason. And it's exciting to have our guest on today because I was just doing some research on the difference between forest and urban forest. So I wrote a bunch of stuff down before I even knew that our guest was coming on. I'm like, perfect timing. I will bounce it off of him and see what he says. Cause I think at the end of the episode today, I think there's going to be a lot of things we can agree on. And I think it's important that we agree on it because we don't give tree people like our guest on today's episode enough credit for what they do. So let's bring them on, let you introduce them, and then we'll start a good conversation on trees.
That sounds good, Joe. Well, I met our guest probably 8 or 9 years ago doing some work with the city of Denver and Denver Parks. Anyhow, I'd like to welcome him to the show because he's been a long friend. I've respected him. He's got enough of those acronyms following his name and credentials that would make anybody smile. So we'll just start off and say, welcome to the show, Rich Wilson from Denver, Colorado. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Terrific, man. So I got it. First off, what do you do on the day to day? Who are you?
What do I do on the day to day and who am I? Well, I started out in arboriculture 34 years ago, next month. So I started out in residential as a ground man and have pretty much worked my way up. I've been with the city and county of Denver for 18 years now. And my day-to-day life, I'm an operations supervisor. So basically, I handle all the pruning and removals in parks and designated parkways on the west side of town. If you're familiar with Denver, that's Colorado Boulevard West, except for the little downtown district pocket. I try to stay out of there. And then I handle the plant healthcare program citywide within the operations purview, the parks and designated parkways. That's all, man. That's it. Piece of cake, huh?
Well, I think to the unfamiliar, I don't want to say uneducated because that would be disrespectful, but for the unknowing, maybe it is not enough. Do you know what I mean? If they don't know what we do on a day-to-day basis, what we do is never enough. So
that's true. That's true. We have an inventory system, and just under operations purview, we have somewhere around 90,000 trees inventoried that we have three crews for pruning and removals, a plant health care crew, and then we have a nursery operations department that plants trees.
90,000 trees that are cared for by you and your team?
Yeah, pretty much.
And that includes Does park take care of all the trees within the city or just the parkways? Do you think downtown trees? Is that a separate unit?
We have two sides of forestry. There's the operations, which is where I'm at. That takes care of the designated parkways and parks and city facilities, seven municipal golf courses, and some various stuff in mountain parks. Then we have a regulations department, and they handle all the public right-of-way trees. So if it's not a designated parkway and it's in that little tree lawn or the setback off of any street, those are managed by our regulations department, but actually the maintenance responsibility falls on the adjacent homeowner for those. So
wow. So is the 90,000 include those two?
No.
Wow, my God. So no. And it's important to know. So you guys are, it could be 100,000 to 150,000 trees that are within a public right of way.
Yeah, I think there's just under 200,000 on their inventoried side. So it's about, 250,000, 300,000 on the trees. High end trees.
Wow.
And to make things even crazier, and I'm sure Rich could attest to this, if you look at what Denver was 100 years ago, how few trees there were, and to think all of the trees that are there present day have been planted and been nurtured to what they are today, you got to think the urban forest in that area has got to be pretty valuable, but it's also got to be pretty challenging too, right?
I think it's really valuable. But it's interesting. I guess that depends what side of the coin you're on, because if you're not a tree person, you kind of take it for granted. As far as we know, it's been here, as long as we have. I don't know how old you are, but there's always been a good tree canopy while I've been around, and I'm a Colorado native, and I actually feel like it's getting smaller. But I think there should be more value placed on trees in the metro area because of how difficult it is to grow them. They don't occur naturally, and they're not cheap. It is for the most part, but considered part of our infrastructure, just like your streets, sewers, sidewalks. It falls under the same category in my world.
Well, and the value to us humans who are populating that area. It totally makes sense. Joe, you look like you were about to say something.
Yeah, you know what? Before we start recording, we were bantering about my three terms. And it's funny, is we're beating all around them right now. So for our listeners, I had an opportunity coming up. If you've been a longtime listener, a short-time listener, our intro music is from a group in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan called Timbers. The song's called Timbers. And we were authorized to use it as our intro, but it was actually part of an episode from an organization up there. Michigan State Extension has a program called Believe It or Not, and they play that music, and they did an episode on it. They're based off of educating kids on trees, very huge, but it's more forestry. But they wanted to do a segment on urban forestry, so I was talking to their executive director, Georgia, and she's like, "Oh my God, Joe, would you be on camera?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll do it." So I started been thinking about this. And the three words are that I think sum up what we're talking about is the first one is diversity. The second one is density. And the third one is distance.
Mm.
So if you think, and let me, I'll give you a definition of each one, why, and then we'll kind of elaborate on them a little bit, but diversity. Rich, you just said it. First of all, when you're in a community, and I'm not sure what the population of the city of Denver is, I would be challenged to say that 50% of the people that live in there are not tree people and don't care about trees. I think we take it for granted that everybody loves trees. Now, Rich, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you bump into all kinds of people that don't like trees.
Yeah, it's one way or the other. They either hate it and they want it cut down, or when you do cut trees down, depending on what part of town you're at, it could be a dead tree full of suckers, and they're like, this tree is still alive, you know, and it's, they don't realize it's a safety issue. So you usually get both sides of that. But I would say for the most part, I don't know what the population in Denver is, but I'd say half is probably a pretty generous estimate on how many people.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to be generous. You know, this has happened in other discussions, is that because we do it for a living and because we do it for our trade, we go to conferences, we educate ourselves. I don't know about you, Rich, but Corey and I are pretty much tree nerds, man. We love trees. This is what we do. And when you do that, you expect everybody else to be excited as you are about it, but it's just not the same. So that was diversity. Now density. And the reason that I put density down is not just how many people per square block, but it was more towards the urban forest, how dense. There's a new, one way or the other, there's a new push towards canopy percentage to make sure you have enough trees to cover the canopy for carbon sequestering and all the fun stuff. Density of trees with your survey, which I will commend the city of Denver for having a survey that you can kind of estimate that. Do you guys use that survey to look at overall canopy and biodiversity, mixing things up, making sure that you're not planting all the same trees?
We do. So I don't really use the canopy percentage in my side, but there is a survey out there that covers the canopy survey, our inventory systems. You can look at it, and we know what neighborhoods are underserved and need more canopy cover. The goal was like 19% canopy coverage, and I really think we're closer to like 12 or 13, but I don't know that number just offhand. That's more like our regulations and programs side of stuff. And the city forester, they use that information more than I do, but we're all about planting more diverse species. Cause you know, you saw it with, the American elms and Dutch elm disease, you know, you get that monoculture and something comes in and wipes it out. Now the new thing, well, it's not really that new. It's been here for 10 years, but emerald ash borer, you know? So I know in-house and on our volunteer projects, we really try to mix up the diversity of what we're planting.
I got to smile because I know Denver is pretty progressive when it comes to diversifying things like the urban canopy. But I'm thinking back to, there's a city in Montana that shall remain nameless, but starts with a B and it's in the middle of the state. And their green ash canopy is somewhere over 80%. So we've had conversations over the years about what does it look like to diversify, not just within, you know, different species. So not just to have white ash, but different oaks, different maples, ginkgos, things like that. And I think that's the future because, like Rich said, when a pest runs in that's selective to a specific genus, it's going to wipe it out. So yeah, I commend you all for sure on that.
Well, in 2006, they had a survey done pre-EAB, and I was just looking at this information actually last week. There was something like 2.2 million trees within the Denver metro area, including private property trees, and they estimated, I think it was 15% of those were ash. So it's comes to about 330,000 ash trees, but that's changed obviously since 2006.
Obviously it's more now, right? People are still planting them.
Well, they're getting them. I hope not. They're getting them for a discount, so they're going to plant them.
Yeah, they're getting them for free at the nursery.
$10 at Home Depot? No.
Listeners were kidding. To tell your neighbors not to panic. We're kidding. We're all friends here.
Yeah, hold on before you plant that ash. give it some time. All right, and now the third thing, and then we can beat up on this, then we'll kind of see what direction we go, is distance. And I thought of that because when we think about here's where I'm thinking of distance. You remember the old saying, does a tree make a sound if it falls in a forest, if you're not there to hear it? You remember hearing, I don't remember if I said it right, but does it make noise if you're not there? Which you think about what sound is, it's vibration. It has to have something to pick it up. So technically, scientifically, you could debate that a tree does not make a noise when it falls in the woods because there's nothing to receive the vibration. Okay. Now that's getting a little too dorky, but in urban forestry, I brought that up because it's the distance between the tree and a target. So, and this is probably, Rich, one of your most important tasks, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that your day-to-day is to reduce risk.
Yes.
Period.
The short answer.
That's what we do.
Wow.
And that's where distance comes in. So if it's a tree in a woodlot in the middle of nowhere, that the chance of it striking a target is nil, that's not a priority. But yeah, that way Mother Nature can have it. So that was part of my distance between forestry and urban forestry.
And that makes sense. Yeah, if it's in a natural area and there's no target, we'll let it fall over.
Oh, woodpeckers will have it. Let the world have it. But your day to day, when I was commending you on what you have to do on a day to day, is that sometimes you have to make harsh decisions on what tree has to go and what not. And then we go back up to diversity. When you have such a diverse group of residents, they may not understand why you have to do what you're doing.
Well, yeah, not just the residents, as I'm thinking, Rich also has to manage his team. So I'm, you know, kind of smiling because I'm wondering, how do you balance the challenges between managing your team, educating the public on why you're making those decisions? What does that look like? I mean, are you the overall authority or do you kick it down the road? I mean, I wouldn't want to be, you know, face to the public, but how do you do it?
You know, so basically my crew, you know, we try to do pruning cycles, and, you know, it's not the 3 to 5 year like everyone suggests. We're more like 7 to 10 on parkways and maybe, you know, 15 to 20 in parks. So I send my crew out. We have work records requested. I'm like, you know, pick a couple areas that we kind of whittle away on because our crews are not very big. And if people complain or have an issue or anything like that, they have a stack of my cards. And I'm like, tell them to call me. And a lot of times, you know, if it's in a designated parkway and it has to be removed, I'll try to knock on the person's door. We have these, the signage that we staple onto the tree that says this tree is scheduled for removal, gives a few reasons why, and a number to reach us at. We put the site ID of the tree on there. So when they call and they're like, we're talking about tree number 57625, we can type that into our inventory and we know which tree they're talking about.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and in heaven, with today's technology, and some of the apps, and we've had some of them on the program, like Single Ops and Arbor Gold. There's a lot of great apps, and we recently had a specialist on talking about AI. So just think, Rich. I'm not sure we talked about age, how close you are to the old R word, aka retirement. Do you think, I think one of the neatest things it would be to possibly use your inventory, run it through some AI and see if there's predictions on direction and planting. It would be kind of neat because it seems like you guys got a pretty solid state-of-the-art thing going. Everything's computerized. What it would be like to run that through some AI and see what it generates.
I'd be interested to check it out. If, you know, if anyone wants to use us as a guinea pig, I'm certainly open.
Well, it's the future, and we have to, Corey, correct me if I'm wrong. You and I have always stated that you have to stay ahead of the curve and you can't be complacent or you get passed up. Obviously your survey, drone survey, we had Arbor Drone on. He's got some great apps on there, and then run it through an AI and get some answers. I think it'd be kind of cool.
I do too. And I think Rich is pretty ahead of the game, and the whole city of Denver forestry is ahead of the game. I mean, they were treating a number of years before EAB even popped up in the metro area. Granted, we have six other native borers and bark beetles that affect ash trees, maybe more now, but they are pretty progressive. But Rich has also just purchased a piece of equipment that I haven't seen anywhere else in any city or private residence or a commercial operation. And I think that's another way that Rich is staying ahead of the curve. Rich, you want to take a minute or two just to talk about it? We don't have to drop the name, but just kind of,
well, a submarine.
It's a spaceship, man. No, I've been doing research. So compaction is a huge issue in our parks, especially after construction projects. As much as we try to delineate tree protection areas, compaction is a huge issue. We throw a fair amount of insecticides out, and even foot traffic. You go to a park like Washington Park, and it's been a park for 100 years, and there's parts of that park that are as hard as concrete, and you try to break that up with an air knife or an air spade, and you know, the crew's out there forever. So probably 5 years ago, I started looking in what are some alternatives, right? And Europe seems to be way ahead of us in their technology and what they'll do. And there's company, I think it was called Voigt, and a few other companies like that over there that have these systems that kind of mix air, like compressed air out of a compressor, and liquid together to break up compaction and put, you know, you can put different things. I've read it.
Yeah.
You know, biochar, vermiculite, whatever, to hold those spaces in the soil open. And so we've been trying to do soil remediation and air spading for a while. And I found there's one company in the United States out of, I think, Kentucky. And their primary customer is golf courses and places like that. But I've been researching this trailer, and it comes with a tank and a compressor. And I was like, I can build that. Just sell me your, you know, the needle, the application device. They're like, no, you got to buy the whole system. So, you know, hopefully in the next month and a half, we'll have that delivered. I've been working on the budget part of that for about 2 or 3 years, because you know, nothing goes fast in the city.
Well, no. Budgets, my understanding with budgets and some of the city work is if you don't use it, you lose it and you never see it again.
Yes, that's true. And then, you know, it's always in flux. So you mentioned invasive species. We don't have confirmed emerald ash borer within the metro area, city and county of Denver. So we've had this money for 8 years since 2016, and people like to eyeball that. You know, we're using it for applications and stuff, you know, like you said, we started treating. But you know, I think in some departments you kind of get this idea that it's not here, we avoid a disaster, we can, you know, we can quit treating. But you know, we're going to deal with that forever. So holding on to the budget is just as hard as getting it. You know, yeah.
That's interesting. We haven't in all the conversations that Joe and I have had, and we even had a municipal arborist or two on, that hasn't come up. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, everything we do is budget based. So it's not, you know, it's not how many treatments can we sell and make a profit on. It's, you know, how much money are you going to give us to protect the urban canopy? So
while providing safety as a primary responsibility for the stakeholders.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It sounds awesome. I'm at a loss. I'm trying to think what you guys are bringing in. We're not going to talk about it, but I'm thinking, man, what is this contraption?
It's kind of like a fracking tool. No, it gets a negative word, but yeah, like a soil compaction fracking. Remember they used to do root fracking or soil fracking, high pressured air. But this does that.
The name of it was the grow gun.
Yep, the grow gun.
The grow gun, yeah.
But it was all compressed air, so it would tear up your fibrous roots, and you'd see the fertilizer blow up along the foundation of the house. Yeah, it was actually kind of cool, but you know.
I got one. I got one donated because everything usually goes to university for testing, and someone donated it to me for the Museum of Arboriculture. And I even have the predecessor to that, which is the Irish Arrow Furt Gun, which was before they had I forgot what I even just said. But I want to throw some air on it and see, videotape it. And I want to, you know, use some AI and have me shoot off into space on the grow gun. But we'll have some fun with it. But yeah, it's interesting that we know that soil compaction and lack of organic matter is key in urban soils. And again, it just it shows a testament to the city of Denver parks that you guys are looking for ways to eliminate the two biggest causes of tree decline so that everything else that you do, these trees are healthy. You know, getting the trees healthy is going to improve your plant health care success, the long-term health of the trees, less pruning, everything. So good for you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah. And Rich, as we're kind of drawing a close to this conversation, are there any other points that you want to get across to our listeners? And keep in mind, some are working for commercial companies. Some maybe are just getting into the industry. Is there anything you want our listener base to learn about how you or how we should maybe be managing our urban forests?
I know there's this stigma with municipal forestry that, you know, especially when I first started years ago, they were like, oh, they only do like one tree a day and, you know, their job's cake and all that. And it couldn't be further from the truth with that. You know, we have some great guys and gals that work with us. And you know, they're really good at what they do. We actually have some pretty high production numbers throughout our department. And I mean, when you're talking that many trees, it's never enough, right? There's always more to do. So you kind of get lost because there's so much stuff to do. It can kind of be depressing. But you know, as a municipal forester, and I never realized this in my younger years, but it's probably the hardest job I've ever had. And the reason I say that is I always thought, hey, it'd be great to be a supervisor and be in charge and do all this stuff. Well, there's a couple things. You're not going to save all the trees, you know, and what hill do you want to die on trying? I kind of lost it there.
Yeah, no, it's hard. Like you were saying, it's one of the most difficult jobs. I mean, you're managing people, you're managing trees, stakeholders.
Oh, that's it. The higher up you go, the more bosses you actually have. So when I was out in the field working on a crew, even in residential work, you'd talk to the supervisor in the morning, he'd give you the work record, you go out, talk to the customer. That was your day, you know? And on the crew, you deal with some of the parks, people in the parks, but as a supervisor, you get all the emails from all the residents. They're filtered through and directed to the appropriate departments and stuff. But it's like you go from having one boss to now you have like a million and they all want something done yesterday, you know? It's cool though. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It's a good challenge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to think it's rewarding that the work you're doing is going to be reciprocated and repeated and appreciated by the people today, but also hopefully by people 20, 30 years from now. So I'm grateful for all the work you've done and the impact that you have certainly on our urban forest, but also our arborist community, because you are highly regarded with what we're doing. So on behalf of me, And I don't know what that's worth, but thank you so much. And yeah, let Joe say a final thing before we part ways. But thanks again, Rich. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, Rich, sounds like you're in the right spot. Hopefully that maybe some of your million bosses out there get a chance to hear this and realize how much you do care, and that next time they see you out there, maybe they'll just stop by and say thank you.
I you know, I appreciate the few emails that I get that are like, hey, thanks for all you do. The park looks great, stuff like that.
That's fantastic. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. On behalf of us, our listeners, really grateful for your time. And hopefully this episode lands well with some people. So thanks again, Rich.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.